103.2 Dublin City FM. Friday, 3 p.m. Gardeners all over the world listening to The Sod Show with Peter Donegan.
One of 3.2 Dublin City FM. It's The Sod Show with Brian Green and Peter Donegan for 2014. Happy New Year to The Sod Show crew. Thanks for listening to us throughout last year, and we hope you stay with us for the next 12 months. Today on The Sod Show, we've got a wonderful interview, and Peter Donegan is talking at length with Damien Corliss, Irish journalist and writer, and he's written a book called Looks Like Rain, 9,000 Years of Irish Weather. If you have any interest in the outdoors, you will just love this interview talking about the Irish weather, and you'll just want to go out to pick up a copy of this great book published by Collins Press, and it's costing £11.99. Looks Like Rain, 9,000 Years of Irish Weather. Stay tuned. Brought to you in association with greensax.ie, compostable bags for home and garden. This is The Sod Show. You can check out Greensax at www.greensax.ie. Let's get straight to it. Something that Brian and Peter have in common, and there's not a lot that we have in common, but the weather is one. I love my weather. I don't go out in it. I stay indoors. I work indoors. Peter works outdoors, and he has to know the weather, and he needs to know the weather. Let's go over to the founder of The Sod Show and our lead interviewer. This is Peter Donegan.
Ireland's best podcast 2013. You are, of course, listening to Peter. In my company is a gentleman by the name of Damien Corliss. For those of you who may not know of Damien, but let me backtrack to the reason why this book, his most recent, caught my attention. Because when I went out on my own, God, what am I now? I won't tell you my age, Isle of Ula and all that stuff, but I was 25, and there's a Bart Simpson moment where he can't go to school and he's his nose pressed against the window, and you can see the what do you call that, the warm breath hitting up against the cold window, and it kind of steams over. We'd 5 solid weeks of that rain weather hit us, and it was my first year in business, and I can count on one hand the amount of times I've cried. This was probably one of those 5. The next time that Irish weather hit me was probably the winter noted of recent in 2010, where we'd minus 18 on Christmas Day. And that rain started in the September of about 2010 and went all the way through to March, I would suggest, where I had frozen paint and frozen bark and frozen everything and frozen, and you could not get a thing in or out of the ground. It is unbelievable how the horticultural industry relies on the weather. So when a book called, I'll take that again. So when a book called Looks Like Rain, 9,000 Years of Irish Weather came true, I just could not keep my hands off it. Because when I spoke to friends of mine and said, they were kind of going, jeepers, do you remember in 1981 it was the big, do you remember the rain down in 90, do you remember the Dodder burst its banks? And I literally had to come and talk to the gentleman that is Damien. First of all, how are you? Welcome to the Sod Show.
Thanks for having me, Peter. Grand. Yeah, absolutely.
What possesses a grown man to write a book on 9,000 years of Irish rain?
I like the way you said 9,000 years of Irish rain. It's Irish weather, but in fact it is 9,000 years of Irish rain. To tell you the truth, it wasn't my idea. The publisher with Collins Press, Con Collins, approached my agent and said, do you know of anybody who might want to be interested in doing a book on Irish weather? And she came to me, and I sort of hemmed and hawed about it at first. I wasn't so sure if I wanted to. And I went out and I bought a couple of books that had been bestsellers on Irish weather from 20 years ago. And I read them, and oh my God, they were dull, dull, dull. They were full of facts and figures and data and explaining. I mean, having written that book, I still probably would be pushed to tell you what an isobar is. Essentially, I gave it some thought. I decided, okay, if you're going to do it, you're not going to do a technical book. You're not going to do a dull, boring book. You're going to do a book about the weather as human beings, real people, have experienced it. And it is around 9,000 years since the first people arrived in Ireland. So I said, I thought about it laterally, and I said, okay, we leave all the scientific jargon out, and we just concentrate on how the weather really affected, you know, people and their experiences. So there's so I went back and I said, if I can do it this way, I'll do it. And then surprisingly, it turned, I mean, I think this is, I was just going over it the other day, and I think this is my 9th book to be published over the last, you know, 15 years or whatever. And it was the easiest to write, incredibly, because when I started looking at for interesting stuff about the weather, it's there. I mean, you know, the weather is part of what we are. It's, it, you know, it's part of our history. I mean, there's various chapters in it about when the weather changed history. And so, you know, it changed history by destroying the Spanish Armada, when Edward de Bruce, the brother of Robert de Bruce, attempted to invade Ireland from Scotland and establish himself as a High King of Ireland. His campaign was brought to an end by famine and pestilence caused by dreadful, dreadful weather that lasted for 2 years. So you had two armies in the country, the sort of the English army, the occupying English army, and the Scots-Irish army. And they were so starving and the weather was so bad that they couldn't even fight each other. So he ended up having to go back to Scotland, where he, unfortunately for him, he was killed pretty soon after, and that was the end of that. The weather, as far as we can ascertain, the Irish weather killed Cromwell. Now, it was a slow and lingering death, but essentially Cromwell came, and we all know about the war crimes that he committed here in 1649, when he landed with his army and you know, razed various cities to the ground, or towns to the ground. But while he was campaigning in Cork during the summer, Cork is actually, the name Cork means marsh, and Cork was extremely marshy, and the combination of marshy ground, warm, muggy weather, and mosquitoes meant that Cromwell, like many of his troops, succumbed to a very, very bad dose of malaria. So when Cromwell went, you know, back home, he had another, you know, 9 years on the planet, and they should have been the greatest years of his life, because he was essentially the king of England, except without, you know, the crown. And but it wasn't, because the malaria that he caught in Cork, because of the muggy weather and the malaria, it destroyed his immune system, and he basically spent the last 9 years of his life slowly dying of various ailments caused by his marshy Cork malaria.
Butter of God, if you're wondering why we've sidetracked off on the Cromwell thing, well, you know, myself and Brian, and you've, I know you're back in studio listening to this, all ears blazing, but you've got to understand, prior to the microphone being turned on, myself and Damien were talking, and what we were basically saying was, there was that old poetry teacher who told you, this is the theory of the poem, this is the theme of the poem, write down the theory, write down the theme, you'll ace your exam. And then you'd one kind of a teacher who told you to close your eyes. And, you know, I've always said, look, if you can picture James actually inside a giant peach, you're halfway probably there to understanding how my head kind of works. And in a horticulture, there are statistically numbers of viewers of television gardening programs are on the decline, and surprisingly the Sod Show is rocketing through the roof, I jest, but you get a rough idea of where I'm heading on this. So the decision to take a book called Looks Like Rain, 9,000 Years of Irish Weather by Damien, by the scruff of the neck, and drag it into the Sod Show, all arms swinging and wailing all over the place, is pretty much a right one. Because when I think of Ireland, apart from the Pint and Sally O'Brien and the way she'd look at you and all these kind of cliches that come to mind, the biggest one that we talk about is Irish weather. But it is the one, again, and I'll double underline this, that we are most reliant upon, and has pretty much shaped the people that we are today. Damien, for the avid horticulturist, there are chapters in there on in particular, outdoors related, and how the weather does affect it. That sounds a little bit silly to say, because you have a mild bad sense of humour, if you don't mind me saying. It's a very good one, I jest in that as well. But there is the bit where it does affect what I do for a living.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, the weather is, as we were saying before we started recording, but the weather is very much part of what we are. And now, I don't know if the weather contributes to, you know, this famed Irish sense of melancholy. Some people suggest that it is responsible for putting us in a bit of a thoughtful, downbeat sort of frame of mind constantly. But yeah, it does. It just affects us. And the thing is that from a horticulture point of view, I mean, there are various, well, you only have to look at, take the potato famine, and essentially that is where horticulturally it affected us by the greatest amount, you know, in our history. And essentially what you had was potato blight. And the potato blight, as you will know yourself, is a fungus. It's airborne. And what happened was that, and what most people don't realize is where it came from. And it actually came from the United States. And the potato blight actually hit the US, the eastern states of the United States, a couple of years before it arrived in Ireland. And it, in turn, arrived via the people in the United States imported seed potatoes from Peru, and they planted them in the States, and they were particularly vulnerable to potato blight. And then these, in turn, were imported as seed potatoes. They were lumpers, is the type. And they were imported into Ireland, where they just grew exponentially. I mean, the lumper potato was just perfectly suited to the sort of mucky, you know, what's the word, sort of dense soil of the Irish that they were planted in Ireland. So essentially they were perfectly suited to the Irish soil and to the Irish climate. What, of course, nobody knew was that they were also perfect, that they were very vulnerable to potato blight. So we all know the story of what happened. And the thing is that because the lumper potato grew so well in Irish soil and in the Irish climate, that's what was planted. And so we became reliant, and you could say over-reliant, on one particular type of potato. And so when the potato blight came and it was vulnerable to this, it was just, you know, crops were destroyed in the fields. They rotted in the ground, and we all know what happened next. A million people died, maybe, you know, several million emigrated. You were saying to me, again, before we started, that, you know, what got you into horticulture was you got a notion in your head that you wanted to plant an oak tree. And oak trees, again, have played a big part. There's, I think, the longest chapter in the book concerns came from an interview that I did with Professor Mike Bailey of Queen's University in Belfast, and he would be one of the world's leading dendrochronologists, which is tree ring dating. And the Irish oak, they sort of stumbled upon the fact that the Irish oak, back in the late 1960s, the scientific team in Queen's University, they had been doing radiocarbon dating to try and date materials going back in our history. But then they discovered that tree rings in oaks, that we had oaks that had fallen over and lain in bogs and were perfectly preserved in bogs going back to about 6000 BC. So almost as long as people have been in Ireland, they have oak trees that go back that far. And in Germany, they also have oak trees going back that far. So between Ireland and Germany, they have been able to reconstruct a climate map of the last 8,000 years for Ireland and Europe. which is extraordinary, because what it does show is that there were several times, several extended periods since people arrived here, when we had years and years of no summer. And the tree ring data shows this, and that there was one period where we had 18 years without a summer. Nothing grew. The tree rings, just the trees did not grow because they put on a spurt of growth every summer. And we had one period of 18 years without a summer. And we had another period. We know that we call, you know, the 5th, 6th, 7th century AD, we call that the Dark Ages. And there is evidence that, you know, for a period from around the year 540 AD to 555, 560 AD, we had a dozen or more years where there was no summer again, and which indicates that the sky stayed dark, essentially. We had almost perpetual night. And what we have found from these tree ring datings is that they tie in precisely with a period of when the old pagan gods were abandoned and Tara was abandoned, the holy pagan site of Tara was abandoned at this period. And there was an intense period of building of abbeys and monasteries. And this all ties in with this prolonged period of constant darkness and cold. It was essentially, you know, the term nuclear winter can be applied to these periods. And there were several periods. And Mike Bailey, the professor who, as I said, is a world expert in this, he says it will happen again. which we don't know when. We know that some of these periods, probably most of them, were caused by huge super volcanoes, like the one currently sort of bubbling under in Yellowstone Park in the States. That's going to blow at some stage, and we don't know what's going to happen. Mike Bailey also thinks that a passing comet in at least one of those cases may have, the comet's tail may have just coated the atmosphere with dust and led to, you know, years of nuclear winter. So we can learn a huge amount, and he has, and they have learned a huge amount from oak trees. Oak trees have a huge amount to tell us.
For those wondering why it was a good idea to get Damien on, this is it. Because the alternative to this, and you have to understand, for those who have studied horticulture, what you are told and what we know as gardeners is that if you look on the back of the seed pack, it'll say so between April and May, or so between September and November, because, correct me if I'm wrong, Damien, but the average mean temperature, which formulates the recommended times for sowing, is based over a 20-year period. I believe it was updated recently. So, for example, the average mean temperature in Ireland in January, February should be somewhere around about 4 or 5. That's the average mean. It's not that it is, and therefore you get to recommend it. And if I'm honest, whilst I do know it off by heart and know it extremely well, equally there are the average rainfall levels for the months of which would have gone right out the window if you go back a couple of years ago, a couple of months ago, even last year, the year before. We've had serious heavy rainfall plays, which takes the rule book and throws it right out the window. But again, to go back, there's a reason why when you read a book like this, it does give you a happier, better understanding of something that is absolutely beautiful, which is Ireland. And it was funny, even last week, I think, or was it the week before, but they were throwing out photographs on the @Ireland Twitter account of this beautiful country in which we live. And if you want to see a place that is equally beautiful and equally depressing, there are tons of them. It just depends on whether you have a rainbow at the end of one or non-stop rain for about 6 weeks solid. Damien, have you got to a point where you're kind of like a little bit of a how would you say it, a quasi horticultural meteorologist slash tree expert weather fanatic. Do people ask you what's the weather like for the crack just to take the mick out of you?
No, not quite. No, I'm I'd never pass myself off as an expert on weather or climate or horticulture, though I take an interest in them all. And the thing is that even our most famous weatherman, who was the late Brendan McWilliams, man with a wonderful sense of humour. In April 1997, he had a front page piece on the Irish Times where he invited all the people of Ireland who had, you know, spare time to go out later that day and get onto a hillside or somewhere and look to the skies to see the ozone hole passing over Ireland. And of course, a lot of them did that only to realise later that it was April the 1st. So it was a brilliant April Fool's joke. But I digress. Brendan McWilliams, anyway, who I said would have been Ireland's foremost weatherman, and actually became head of the European Satellite Weather Agency towards the end of his career. So he was distinguished, you know, worldwide. But he would have been our greatest weather expert, and he approved of this device or whatever trick that weather people have, weather forecasters have, and it's called hedging. And essentially, you know, if you're ever, and it's only after thinking about it and I start listening maybe closer to the weather forecasts, and even this morning it happened again. And essentially hedging is that because Ireland's weather, you can get four seasons in one day, you can get four seasons in half an hour basically. So the weather people that come on our TV and our radio every day and tell us, an awful lot of the time they're hedging, and hedging is essentially hedging their bets. And they'll predict a little bit of wind and a little bit of rain, and they'll predict everything for the coming 24 hours. And if you listen carefully, they're basically covering their arses, basically. So he approved of this. And like I said, he would have been Ireland's most distinguished weather forecaster. But he basically said, you know, you have to sort of make it up sometimes. Keep your fingers crossed.
Whilst I have you here, and it just crossed my mind when I was in college, and we would head off down to the fields for the 3-4 hours. I had long hair down to just above my shoulders. When my hair went a little bit wavy, or still does to this day, I used to bring my raincoat with me, even though the sun were splitting the skies. Do you understand that theory? Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And again,
can you explain it for those listening at home to prove that I am right?
Well, you know, it's a very rare day in Ireland that you don't at least expect some rain to fall. No, I think that's perfectly sensible. I even, you know, in my car, I always carry an umbrella because, you know, but again, and it's something that we learnt at school and only came back to me researching this book, the whole thing about the Irish mantle, you know, or the Great Irish Mantle, as it would have been called. And we would have learned about it in primary school in history class. And it was this cloak, basically, that people wore as protection against the worst. That, I mean, this is the whole thing that, you know, there is a saying that there's no such thing as bad weather, only bad clothing. But now that's clearly nonsense, because in Ireland we get lots of bad weather. But certainly good clothing can really help. And the Irish, you know, of God knows how long ago, developed this mantle. And it was described by Edmund Spenser, one of the great English poets of all time. He wrote The Faery Queen, etc. And he basically described the Irish mantle as a tent that people, you know, they could wear it as a tent. It was a shield against, you know, weapons, because it was thick, and he basically described it as the perfect all-weather single piece of clothing that would do for all weather. And at the time that he was writing, he lived in Cork. He was a Cork landlord as well, though his solution to England's Irish problem, I mean, he hated the Irish. He thought that they were muck savages. And he basically, his solution for England's problem in Ireland was to wipe out the Irish people completely. Yeah, a lovely man, yeah. But anyway, the thing is, at that time, when he was living here, Queen Elizabeth I, she had an army here with the Earl of Essex, and Essex was sent over and told, conquer the Irish. And this was around 1600, 1598, 1599. And Essex's men were, they just didn't have the clothes to protect themselves from the Irish rain and cold and damp and constant damp. And so the English were dying in their, hundreds and thousands from the Irish weather, whereas the Irish had their great mantle and no bother at all, because they just had the proper clothes. And one of the English quartermasters, he actually wrote to a superior saying, can we not get a supply of Irish mantles? And no, they couldn't, because they were associated with muck savagery and, the thing that, we're fighting against, essentially. So the English died for lack of proper clothing.
And that's how you win a war. Do nothing. Yeah, best way.
I could listen to interviews about weather all day long. Wonderful. I'm still tuned into millibars, and I just haven't got used to this Hector Pascals yet. More from Damien Corus, speaking with Peter Donegan, next week on The Sod Show for the conclusion of that wonderful interview. Something come in on the notice board, and it's the Community Garden Network. They're having a full day event in Cork City. Communication and Leadership Skills Course, Gardening Visit and Networking Meeting. It's Saturday the 1st of February. That's the main thing to remember. Saturday the 1st of February. It's all day, so 9:30 to 5 p.m. Contact the cgn11 at gmail.com, the cgn11 at gmail.com, or 087-684-3374 for more info. You must RSVP. It's free for CGN Network members. 1st of February 2014. Still not used to the 2014 bit, but I'll suppose get used to it during the year. We haven't had a song of the week yet, so let's play out with one. Everywhere you go, always take the weather with you. Everywhere you go, always take the weather. Everywhere you go, always take the weather with you. Everywhere you go, always take the weather with you. With thanks to our sponsors, greensacks.ie, compostable bags for home and garden. Check them out on the internet at greensacks.ie. My name is Brian Green. Thanks for listening. His name is Peter Donegan. He thanks you for listening too. We're back next week, Friday, 3 p.m., 103.2, Dublin City FM. Everyone.